Hello and welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronic supply chain. I'm Mike Buteau, Editor-in-Chief of PCDNF and Circuits Assembly. My guest today is Joe Felstad. Joe has more than 40 years of international experience in electronic interconnection and packaging technology in a variety of capacities, from chemist to process engineer, and from international consultant to CEO. A well-known author and magazine columnist on the subject of electronic interconnection technologies, Joe was also the spark behind Silicon Pipe, a developer of high-speed interconnection technologies. And he was formerly with Tessera, a global leader in chip-scale packaging, where he was appointed the first corporate fellowship for his innovations. As an inventor, his innovations for electronic interconnection products, medical devices, processes, and consumer items have thus far yielded more than 150 issued or pending U.S. patents, and numerous foreign patent awards. As a side project, Joe has been developing a program to encourage innovation, and that's what we will talk about today. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Mike. Greatly appreciate your time and interest.
So, Joe, you've been discussing for the past year an idea for a prize for encouraging innovation. What can you tell us about it?
Thanks, Mike. I'm referring to it as the Occam Prize, again, predicated on obviously the Occam process, which was the cornerstone of this effort. And it's been, 10 years of, as I've said, pushing rope, trying to get people to comfortable with the idea. And it's, initially there was some interest. You'll recall back at the, PCB Design East Expo almost 10 years ago when you were kind enough to invite me to come and share some of this with the designers. And, I looked at a room full of designers who were, by and large nodding their heads and said, yeah, this sort of kind of makes sense. The question in their mind was, who's going to make it? And I had a similar response from people in the manufacturing of world who would say, I think I can probably make this, but who's going to design it? So I have a chicken and egg conundrum, if you will, and trying to figure out how do you, bring out the sword to, in another metaphor, cut through the Gordian knot. And break it open so that people can start to think about this. And I thought, one non-threatening way would be to get designers to incentivize circuit board designers to think about the possibilities based on their personal experience of just essentially following a simple set of design guidelines to reconsider any particular product that they've already done, preferably, so they know that they've done a good job, and go back and redesign exactly that same product, but using, the Occam principles, which will be outlined in the prize concept. So the prize is there. It's, it'll be some monetary and some, trophies and some recognition for anybody. The scope is international, and it'll be recognition for anybody who participates in the process. But my personal feeling is that the real reward for the designer will be in going through this exercise and expanding their knowledge and being able to see what it can bring to their product designs in terms of being able to make them more compact, better performing, more reliable, lighter weight, all the good things that we're trying to do. And I believe that the Occam concept will do that. And hopefully by going through this process, they will, learn to see things in a different way.
So for the benefit of our audience, why call it the Occam Prize?
Well, I was inspired when I first read a quote from a book on philosophy, I think it was, when I was in high school. And it's William of Ockham, 12th, 13th century logician monk from England. The quote that captured my mind was, it's vanity to do with more that which can be done with less. You know, Occam shows up in a lot of scientific inquiry as well. You know, there's what's called Occam's razor, which where he stated that, you know, given multiple explanations for any particular observed phenomenon, the simplest one is most likely to be correct, which is a good way of being able to parse out problems and try and figure out, you know, what are we looking at? And so it works. It passes the test there. But the thought that, as I say, attracted me was this one of looking at, you know, minimalization, trying to find the lowest common denominator in terms of product and production. So I called it the Occam process when I said, you know, if you can build electronic assemblies without solder, you can significantly reduce the number of process steps that are associated and make products that are should be at once, you know, cheaper and more reliable and more environmentally friendly than the methodologies that we use currently.
So it sounds something like the literary version of keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah. Actually, literature is full of, quotes that seem to have resonated through time. Einstein said, you know, things should be made as simple as possible and not one bit simpler. I liked Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, and I'm reading his book, Wind, Sand, and Stars. There was a quote from that book where he observing the wing of an aircraft and waxing poetically said, the designer or the good designer knows that perfection in design is achieved not when there's nothing more that can be added, but nothing more that can be taken away. And, you know, I found myself subscribing to that as a way of life, is trying to, what's the minimum amount that it takes, you know, and we tend to make things in our lives, you know, we tend to add, you know, complexity rather than, you know, to simplify. And for simplification, you can go back to one of your neighbors, so to speak, and Thoreau, you know, talked about simplify. That was his whole message, is to bring it down to the things that really matter. And trying to parse those out or tease those out of your life is not an easy thing.
Well said. So, Joe, who do you hope to recognize with the Occam Prize? Or, in other words, who or what would be eligible?
Well, my target is designers of electronic assemblies. Those are the people that I want to speak to. And in that first presentation that I made at that PCB Design East conference, I had a room full of people that were, you know, nodding their heads in agreement with me relative to the things that I was trying to bring forth. But for the most part, those that came up afterwards said, you know, this is a very interesting idea, but who's going to build it? And I said, well, therein lies the rub. Can it be built? Yeah, it can be built, you know, using the existing infrastructure, but it's not what we do. And so I thought, well, okay, I'm not going to get people to build. You know, builders will, some will say, yeah, I can build that, but who's going to design it? Designers will say, I think I can design that, but who's going to build it? So I've decided to, you know, bring out my sword to cut through the Gordian knot and offer a prize, create an international competition for designers to expand the horizons of their thought and go through a process of designing a product with the prescription of Occam. That is to, build rather than a circuit board and attach components to it, build a component board and then build up the circuits on it. So that reversal of process will open up, I think, for them, and as they expose themselves and they start to dig in on it, to a much, or to an appreciation of what can be done if we just start to do things a bit differently than we're doing today. So the big hope of the Occam Prize is to incentivize designers to expand their knowledge, and to everybody who participates get recognition, and, you know, using a panel of judges, have some judges decide who has done the best job of a redesign or a first pass design. The preference in my thinking is redesign, because that's where the designer is going to be able to see the benefits for themselves. And that, you know, they're going to see what they can do if they take any design that they've done and do a simple redesign of that using the Occam principles, which is a short-listed prescription that I'm in the process. I've written about for the last 10 years, but, you know, I keep on trying to winnow it down to how short a prescription I can give for people to be able to be successful in this design process.
Would you anticipate that entrants would have to submit something, or do you think that the judges would go out looking for examples?
Well, my intent is to, you know, broadcast two designers the opening of this competition for people to show to themselves. I think the winners, yeah, there's going to be some winners in this, but the real winners is anybody who participates. That's what I want, is for them to expand their knowledge and then to start to think in new ways and see what it is that might be done, so that everybody who participates is going to come away a little bit smarter, a little bit like the jurist Oliver Wendell Holmes said, is that the mind that's been expanded by a new idea or concept never returns to its original dimensions. And he wasn't a metallurgist, but that sounds a lot like plastic deformation.
So what all would be involved now in getting the program off the ground?
Well, this is, you know, where I'm at, is trying to get this word out and you know, bring as many pieces into a common forum so that, and then I can expand on it. I have secured a website, you know, OccamPrize.com, that I'm going to use as a, you know, base station, if you will, for this, but it's also going to be, you know, shared with people within, you know, the industry, people such as yourself that are, you know, pivotal and, you know, focal points for knowledge and information and within our industry. It's you know, as we've spoken in the past, I mentioned, you know, the fact that information is coming at us at such an incredible rate these days that it's really hard to take it all in. It just floods at us, and I can't keep up with it. I just find it kind of mind-numbing in my own way. But to get the attention out there and get it into the minds of people so they can see the opportunity. I was last week, I gave a keynote address at a conference in Romania, and you know, I mean, it was very appreciative of the fact that the, you know, the half of the first day's session was about disruptive technologies that are sustainable, and in the minds of you know, some professors from a number of different universities, but particularly Bucharest Polytechnic University, and this Occam concept is something that's grabbed hold with them, and they're pursuing it. And in their laboratories and trying to figure out how they can bring this to it. They have some conferences, too, that are quite interesting. And if you have time and interest, I'd love to point you to it. One is called TIE, and it's for designers. And they're doing some fabulous things for the printed circuit design community, and they want to continue to do that. A lot of smart people, they don't have necessarily all the infrastructure for manufacturing that, you know, is enjoyed in the U.S. and Europe and other places in Europe and in Asia, but they've got smart people and they're driven. I've seen some real interesting things there. Maybe that's a topic for discussion at another time. But so, you know, what I've gotten out of there, I've spoken to people at some major corporations in China and in Japan, and, you know, most of the traction, unfortunately, seems to be outside the U.S. The U.S. seems to be a little bit slower to pick up on some of these ideas than other places. And, of course, we're successful, so it's hard to argue with that. But the hope is that, you know, we'll be able to get a little more attention from the U.S. I'm making the competition, you know, international, because the hope is that we'll be able to get you know, the attention of a lot of people in places that are not wedded to traditional approaches to design yet, and put this out there as a way to be able to make something a bit, how shall I say, you know, a little more futuristic, because I think that at the end of the day, the economics of it are going to drive it. And that's what I hope to prove when I put these informations out there. There will be, by the way, with the prize, there's going to be, you know, will be cash prizes. There will also be, you know, trophies and awards. But as I say, everybody gets recognition. But more important, the prizes and the recognition is the increasing of their knowledge and understanding and appreciation. And I hope that that is something that they will really find benefit from.
So it will be an international competition. That's great. Joe, will it be restricted to open source ideas, or could people submit proprietary concepts?
Well, I'm looking at it mostly from an open perspective. At this particular time, I'm just saying, just follow this basic rule set. And if you come up, you know, you see what you get there. Where it goes from there, I don't have any control over it. You know, the knowledge that we have collectively, nobody's as smart as all of us, shall we say. I don't know how far this goes. I've been thinking about it for 10 years, and I keep on finding new little facets of structural or predictive elements, ways of being able to apply the technology that make me go, wow, I didn't think about that, you know. And so I start to think, and I suspect that just by going through this exercise, people are going to come up with, you know, more advanced thoughts. And the hope is at the end of the day that the door will be opened, you know, for access by everybody, to make everybody a winner at the end of the day. And most importantly, you know, without sounding too maudlin, is, you know, the planet. I'm very concerned about the future, you know, for my, you know, kids and grandkids. Much of what we're doing is not sustainable. So I'm saying, here's a way, using materials that are extremely sustainable in a thoughtful way, and designing so that we use less of them, I think it's an interesting future. I mean, a lot of what I'm talking about is heretical too, because I'm going to challenge people to think of their designs not in terms of the execution with the most transistors possible, but the least. Is how much does it take to be able to get through it? For example, you know, presently, you know, a designer sets about a design. He'll go to one of the design catalogs that are out there, pick a component that meets the requirements that he has, and normally he'll, or very often, he'll be looking for a single function on that device to be able to execute his design. But so what about all the rest of it? Well, he has to wire all that up too, even if he's not going to use it. So there's all kinds of design inefficiencies in doing what we do. But if we could, at some point in time in the future, disintegrate circuits and allow those functional blocks to be available to the designer in a packaged form for them to be able to lay out their design in the future, I think that's pretty compelling. But it, you know, it flies in the face of, you know, billions of dollars of sunk investment in status quo, where, you know, new ASIC designs cost, you know, probably, you know, $30, $40, $50 million to bring to market. New processors, you know, $1 billion or more. So there's a lot of money sunk in these kinds of things, but we can do it simpler. And maybe one of the things that I've tried to focus here, and I may pay attention to that, is, you know, we're a planet of 7, soon to be 8 billion people, and our industry, quite frankly, is focused on the needs of 3 billion people on the top of the market, because that's where the money is. But I think that we need to, you know, turn our attention a little bit more. There's an opportunity for, you know, 4 to possibly 5 billion people that we can build products more specifically for. And one thing I've been saying for a while is that, you know, what to the military, aerospace, automotive, and medical product developers and users have in common with the world's poorest people. And both of these groups need the most reliable electronics we can possibly make. If you're if you're making, you know, $2 a day and you make an investment in an electronic product, you know, that thing better last, you know, because you can't afford to repurchase them. We at the top, yeah, we got a new one. What's the fashion statement? We'll buy the next one and don't worry too much about it. But, you know, if we're going to serve the needs of all the people on the planet in a sustainable way, then we're going to have to rethink how we set ourselves to be able to make these products and make them available for those less fortunate ourselves by virtue of the fact that they happen to be born in the wrong place at the wrong time.
You know, I make more than $2 a day, but I can't keep up with the cost of all the cell phones that my kids keep breaking. So, so in proposing to reverse the trend line of the number of transistors used, instead of seeing that increase or double, you know, to actually propose that it decrease, we're looking at turning Moore's law, you know, on its head. Not only would that upset the supply chain in terms of all the semiconductor manufacturers and the materials suppliers and the equipment suppliers, I can't think of the legions of editors who will no longer be able to refer to Moore's law as part of our editorials. So maybe we'll have to coin a new phrase like, you know, Felstad's law or something like that to reflect the diminishing number of transistors in a device.
Well, I didn't know that that would be the case. And I mean, Gordon Moore never proclaimed it a law. He proclaimed it an observation, but we've slavishly as an industry tried to continue to, you know, push this down to where we have a few nanometer transistors. That's another part of this story, Mike, is we go down to these extremely low nodes, we're making things not more reliable, less reliable. You know, we're throwing billions of transistors at it. Now, granted, there's a lot of duplication and things, but the fact of the matter is that transistors that smart start to wear out. You know, at some of those higher nodes, we could make integrated circuits that would prospectively last, you know, decades or potentially even hundreds of years. And is there something intrinsically wrong with that? Yeah. Maybe if you're an economist, you're going to look at it and say, well, economics runs on the fact that wants exceed needs. And we have to make things less reliable in order to sustain ourselves economically into the future. In fact, there was a pamphlet written by a fellow named Bernard London in the 1930s that says ending the depression through planned obsolescence. His prescription was that the government mandate that people start to throw away their products, you know, chairs, tables, and the like, in a certain timely manner, in order to make sure that people continue to buy, you know, more of those products and keep dollars flowing. I don't know that that's, you know, it strikes me as not particularly good. One of the curiosities of that was that Aldous Huxley was a contemporary of London, and he wrote in Brave New World and, you know, that dystopian future, and I forget the year, it was AF, after Ford 472 or something like that. He talked about this future with, you know, people in different classes, and that in the messaging that came through from speakers, the hypnopedic messages were, you know, ending is better than mending, and less stitches means more riches. So they were at odds with each other conceptually. Who's right? Well, I'm not sure. You know, there is certainly that need to drive ourselves to continue to create and provide opportunities for those new inventions to make their way to the market and hopefully improve, you know, our lives in some fashion. But I don't know that everything needs to be less reliable. I think we can still make products that are reliable. And if we can make hand-me-downs that still work, you know, I've got, you know, in my home some, tend to buy old things anyway, but some of the old stuff's been around for, you know, 50, 60, 70 years and still performs its function quite nicely for me. And it looks kind of nice too.
You know, Ray Prasad once told me when I was just starting out in the industry, I was asking about this new technology called surface mount. And Ray sort of chuckled and he said, you know, there will always be room for through hole because it works.
Yep. Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I say that as I'm looking around my office and I'm just sort of counting up. There's five computers, there's three headsets, multiple calculators, you know, four speakers. You know, I just start 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 phones. 7 phones, Joe. So sometimes I think that market stops here in Boston.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Have you given thought to what the makeup of the judges or that panel would be?
Well, you know, again, people I'm looking for, people with experience in the industry. Hopefully, you know, this, you know, people like myself that are getting a little bit long in the tooth. You know, I've been at it for, you know, since 1972, so I've 45 years in this, in looking at things. But I've often said, I found myself observing and saying that, you know, if I had been teletransported from the time I entered the printed circuit industry to today, I could walk into a shop and say, you know, I recognize this and I know how this works and I know how to do that. And I would say, you know, this is, it's very cool. I'd be impressed clearly with the, you know, what we, the kinds of tools and machines and processes that have become available allow us to make these feature sizes, but lines and spaces really haven't, on circuit boards, really have not followed the same path as Moore's Law, nor probably, well, they didn't need to. I mean, there's other things that have been done at other levels. But anyway, I think that we need to just do some reconsideration that, you know, there's, you know, Heraclitus said nothing is permanent except change. And, you know, he lived, what, 4,000 years ago or thereabouts, or at least a couple thousand, 3,000 maybe. And, it's, you know, it is the notion of change that's going to happen. So there's always going to be some sort of a change. Here's something that is, you know, being proffered for consideration by a newer generation. And hopefully, you know, the older generation is, you know, the people we would be looking at for, you know, bringing to look to design. And I've got a number of, well, we have a number of mutual friends who are highly accomplished designers who could evaluate. You know, and, you know, quite frankly, on a personal basis, they've been, you know, enthusiastic about the idea of you know, the Occam concept, but they also, you know, make their living by, you know, continuing to patch up the stuff that we do today. And I would like to bowl them into the process because, you know, we're all at a certain point in time, we will trundle off this mortal coil and, you know, hopefully we'll leave things a little bit better by teaching people how to do things a little bit differently than what we're doing today and give them that opportunity.
When do you think you will award the first Occam Prize, and do you anticipate this will be an annual event?
Well, I'm going to hope that it's an annual event because I don't think that we're going to, I mean, it's not like the X Prize where the first guy that gets into space is going to be the winner, you know, it's like Burt Rutan or the Virgin people that were pursuing, you know, first one to recycle a spacecraft and with people in it in a very short period of time. That's kind of one and done, or the first, I forget the name of the prize that they used for manned flight over a certain distance. You know, once you've done that, it's one and done. The prize that they give is pretty substantial, but this thing is kind of an evolution, and at times in the future, it's going to doubtless include, you know, innovations that I haven't anticipated or advancements that I haven't anticipated. So I can't see any reason why it needs to stop at one. I would think, you know, that every year there's a potential for having people participate and, you know, see how far they can nudge things forward because it's continuum. It's not a dead stop. And I, you know, I'm excited to see where those things will go. And so the website will be up and offer people to see what they did in from one year to the next and see how far the ball or the concept was advanced by the thinking of designers. It won't necessarily mean that they're going to see products on shelves, but it will show a progression of thought and in terms of what this might do should we decide collectively to start to manufacture product like this without solder. You know, I know there's all kinds of objections to the idea that I'm suggesting here, because people will say, well, what about rework and repair? And I often say, well, why are you reworking and repairing things? If you did it right the first time, you wouldn't have to do it. And there's no reason to repair something or that was built properly, or rework it if it was built properly. So it's that notion of focusing on doing, you know, first the right things and then doing those things right. And that is the hope. I mean, there's solder as much as I'll say here again, is that solder is going to be around long after I've returned to my elemental form. It's not going to go away. It is a useful material and solution, but I don't think it is necessarily going to provide the best solution. It'll provide solutions. But it's not necessarily going to provide the solutions that have the least number of steps. Those can be done differently, I say, a la Occam, perhaps.
Given that you are proposing a cash prize, Joe, are you accepting contributions or sponsors to help underwrite it?
Well, I haven't gone out and pursued it in exactly those terms, but that makes sense. I mean, for me, I mean, it's, again, I'm I'm a bit of a madman. And, you know, I kind of worked by myself for, you know, the last, certainly the last 10 years. It's one of those things I've been hesitant to bring people on when I can't be certain that I'm going to, you know, pay them a wage. But if there are, you know, companies or individuals out there that are interested from this, then I'd be happy to and delighted to work with them cooperatively to make this thing manifest for, you know, if not the current generation, some future generation, and whatever they can do to help, that would be great. I'm not a Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates, so I don't have an unlimited supply of resources. But at the end of the day, I think that the money prizes are and the trophies and the stuff will be perhaps secondary. My thinking is that they'll be secondary to the advancement of the thinking of the individuals who are going to, you know, take this journey. I think that's where they win. The cash prizes, you know, well, hopefully they're going to be substantial enough that they will allow people to, you know, make some improvements in their lives. Certainly if the winners turn out to be somebody from, you know, a third world country or South Asia, that they will be, you know, substantial enough for them to improve their lives in a much more substantive way. And, you know, that's great. But, you know, if they happen to live in, you know, the U.S., it'll be enough to, you know, do something nice. It's not going to put anybody in retirement. I guarantee you that.
Well, thank you, Joe. So, again, for the listeners, the website is OccamPrize.com, OccamPrize.com. Our guest today has been Joe Felstad. Joe, thank you for talking with us today.
Thank you so much, Mike. Greatly appreciate it and look forward to seeing you here again soon.